Due to the mystic nature of this podcast, viewer discretion is advised. Greetings
and salutations.
You are listening to Witchcraft and Vibrations with yours truly, the Duchess of Capricorn
and Lady Ram.
We are psychologists,
budding astrologists,
and self-identifying witches.
Last episode, we clearly had much to say about the basics of astrology.
Let's round it all out with a focus on the houses. If you like what you hear, please click that subscribe button on Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or wherever you listen to your pods.
You can also follow us on Instagram at witchcraft.vibrations for additional occult content and behind-the-scenes sneak peeks.
And now we go into our final dissection.
The houses!
Just as there are 12 zodiac signs,
12 months in the year,
12 eggs in a carton,
12 kids and cheaper by the dozen,
and 12 drummers drumming,
there are also 12 houses!
What a concept! So, we're not getting into the deep debate of house calculations, but whatever you use, basically the houses are an additional 12 zones charted on, well, your birth chart. Knowing your birth time is so important to truly understanding your birth chart entirely, as the zodiac sign on the eastern horizon, your ascendant, marks the sign of your first house. This sign is different from the planet and/or zodiac sign ruling the house. After that first house is marked with its zodiac sign, each house following the first will be influenced by the signs in sequential order.
For example, if your ascendant is in Gemini, then your first house is Gemini, your second house is Cancer, your third house is Leo, fourth Virgo, fifth Libra, and so on and so forth. This would put your 12th house in Taurus.
Sounds personal. Well, I personally had to request my entire birth records to learn my birth time since, one, my birth certificate didn't say shit, and then two, no one in my family could remember shit. LOL. If you do not know your birth time, however, birth chart calculations will assume your rising sign to be the same as your sun sign. Or if you want to get fun with things, you can play around with birth time calculations and see which rising sign speaks to you the most. I mean, again, astrology is just another tool we have to explore ourselves and our place in the universe. It does not need to be hardcore authoritarian in the ways.
Nah, this is chill. And to reiterate, this is not a bad method of guesstimation, as the sun sign and ascendants are both presentations of your outward persona, and you work with the information that you have. Regarding calculations, some people avoid talking about the houses, which is like completely disregarding reversals in tarot or just skipping an entire year of math class. It does leave out an entire layer of understanding to your birth chart and personality in the astrological context.
Before we dive into each house, I wanted to dabble in some history here yet again.
Sprinkle, sprinkle.
From your boy, Dr. Boxer. Back in the day, the, quote, angular houses were considered, quote, the most powerful, as these houses are pointing directly north, east, your ascendant, west, and south, your midheaven, in a fun angular fashion, although really we're all about the angles, always. These would be your first, fourth, seventh, and tenth houses, and they're also ruled by the cardinal signs. Next, the quote, secedent houses, the second, fifth, eighth, and eleventh, were thought to be the quote, upcoming houses, as eventually celestial bodies in these houses would be moving to the angular houses within a couple hours. These are ruled by the fixed signs. Finally, the quote, cadent houses were believed to be, quote, weak and unlucky, as the celestial bodies in these houses recently moved from the strong angular houses, again, a couple hours ago, as the houses, the ascendant time changes, so, yeah. It's quick changing happening. These houses are ruled by the mutable signs, and they are the 3rd, 6th, 9th, and 12th.
It helps me to visualize them spread out like a little sinusoidal graph with a distinct rise and fall. So I think that it's interesting that the first angular cutting edge ones are the cardinal signs, which provide that push up the hill. The succedent ones, quote unquote, succeed them as the fixed ones with the top of the little bump, and the cadent ones are the little falling action of the bell curve. Just my own mnemonics.
Alrighty, let's begin dissecting these houses. First, we will be going through the houses that rule more of the private personal sphere of life with house number one. To sprinkle in some more history from a schema heaven, the classical name for the first house was, quote, horoscope with the significance of, quote, birth, life, and self, end quote.
The first one is the house of you, baby. It's the house of the ego and the outward acting self, your personality and how you approach and appear to the world. The placements in your first house affect your personality strongly, and the characteristics of these signs end up being a keynote to how you present yourself, even if they aren't your sun sign.
It is also ruled by the planet Mars, with the sign Aries associated, the first cardinal sign, the first angular house, like, the first is important.
And thinking about the number one numerologically, the number represents originality, leadership, independence, precision, self-discovery, empowerment. It is a very masculine number because phallic.
It looks like a penis.
I guess. So if zero, representing the womb and being the primordial void, a feminine number of passivity, unity, wholeness, one succeeds it with a masculine, willful energy. That's once again reflected in the first zodiac sign, being the burst of passion and heat, which ignites the cycle. Similarly, the first house illuminates your outward projection of you.
Next to Bat, the second house, the classical name was, quote, Gate of Hades, with the significance of, quote, wealth.
The second house is the house of material, possessions, and security. Associated with your, well, material wealth, possessions, and your concrete values. It illuminates what you're working with on the material side of things, but also what you desire and value, such as your aesthetics and financials. Capitalism. Planets in this house operate within this realm.
With a ruler of Venus related to the sign Taurus, this makes sense. Taurus ruled by Venus evokes more materialistic concerns such as wealth, physical items, your aesthetic, what you want.
Oh yeah, and bring in the numbers again. Thinking about two brings ideas of cooperation, partnership, and balance to mind. You need at least two things to balance anything. So, duality, light versus dark, light and dark, the yin and the yang, it really does bring up that balance between work and play as well, which I feel Taurus, being, again, a Venus Earth sign, exemplifies very well.
Clearly, this house has expanded a little bit on its description, being materials, possessions, security, aesthetics, but also wealth could really be a short summary of all of those things.
Yes. Like, where do you see abundance in your life within your economical sector?
What is your warm fuzzy blanket?
Yes. What's your treat yourself?
Third to the plate, house three. The classical name was, quote, goddess. And historical significant was, quote, siblings and short journeys.
The third house, house of local community and communication, is associated with Gemini, the sign of communication and technology. This house is related to thinking, intellect, communication, and early environment. Placements in this house do indicate how you interact with others and operate mentally, and often associated, again, with siblings.
I mean, with a ruler of Mercury, duh. We are looking at the god of communication and dreams. But also with the sign of the twins, evoking thoughts of siblings, an image of connection with another human.
Yeah, and looking at the number three, it's the trinity of spirituality, creativity, self-expression, circle of life, the divine triune, success, intuition, and fortune. A tripod, really, of support. And again, this house really brings up that childhood aspect as well, like where you develop, your approach to life, that influences how you communicate. And again, Gemini is able to embody that trinity of the twins, two, plus their desires, which if you add it up is 3. Conspiracy symbolism.
Yeah, I mean, you also explore the world with your siblings during childhood, having these, quote, short journeys as historical people.
Adventures!
People said. Or even other people that you consider, quote, siblings, just another person that is really close to you.
I think of Malcolm in the Middle. Chaos would make a family. That's all.
Next on the list, the fourth house. Classical name is, quote, lower midheaven. Not to be confused with the midheaven. This is opposite the midheaven, the lower midheaven. It had a significance of, quote, parents and property.
The fourth house is the house of home and family. So placements here reflect family orientation, your approach to dig into your past for self-discovery, and how your father, in some cases mother, was experienced by you. I assume the parent that was most present in the home. The associated sign, Cancer, emphasizes the idea of nurture and maternal caring. So it's interesting how it's like, daddy issues.
It is interesting. But at the same time, the home does have different cultural aspects where perhaps the home is where the mother reigns, but also there are these ideas of the father being the provider to the whole family, supporting financially, differing from culture to culture, of course. So perhaps these various ideas of the home and what that really means have obscure, true associations of parent, a specific parent with the house.
Family is supposed to keep you grounded and provide your foundation for stability and emotional empowerment. With that in mind, fourth being the house of Cancer, this familial nurture aspect comes into play. If 3 is a rudimentary balance or support enough to offer structure, then numerologically, 4 brings into the arena more of a solid foundation. 4 is an auspicious number. There's 4 seasons, 4 elements, 4 directions or corners of the earth. Prince Humperdinck was supposed to send out 4 of his fastest ships to find Wesley. Wink, wink.
Is this why American society said, ooh, nuclear families? 4.
Make it 4.
4.
Yeah. Just easier to categorize us in capitalism.
I suppose. But also bringing in that idea of stability. It's also historically parents and property, which has kind of translated to this idea of stability, like your foundation and initial movement into life. Depending on socioeconomic situations, your parents will provide this stability into life, this inheritance to give you a good foundation to also grow up in the world. Moving forward, we have the fifth house. The classical name is, quote, good fortune. How fun. With the significance of, quote, children and happiness.
Good fortune. Ooh la la. And that's on Leo, baby. The fifth house is the house of creativity and affection. The placements in this house represent your expression of your personal energies. This includes self-care, displays of affection, and your own creative pursuits. Leo is the fifth sign, and this house embodies that fiery passion in the fixed regard, so very personal, but more stationary.
I mean, yeah, we got this fiery lion sign exuding regal energy about itself, boosted by our solar system's star. Bam, spotlight energy.
And then, as I understand the number 5, it brings up creativity and honor. 5 golden rings! I don't know why that's, like, the image in my mind, but here we are. 5 is also adventure, excitement, and the first number pulling towards the higher consciousness. It is auspicious in a lot of cultures, not to mention pentagons, pentagrams, pentacles, penta anything. It's pretty highly regarded. It is also a number of big life changes. When you pull 5s in tarot, usually there's a turning point to something, marriage, divorce, moves, new jobs. There's an important decision to be made.
I feel like an abstract idea of children and happiness, of that creativity and affection, of just, just pureness. Like, creativity is very, like, I feel higher consciousness.
Yeah, this is also, like, coming back to the this is the second firehouse, I guess, elementally as well. So, like, it's starting a new cycle again of the elements of, like, the 4s. So here's number 5. The element comes back to, like, fire, which is spirit, like, self spirit.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say besides spotlight energy, like the arts.
That is also really associated with the fifth house. Five's a karma number, so like, yeah, karmic decision really here. Cool.
Yeah, good fortune.
Good fortune. Fortunato in the cask of Amontillado.
Reaching the end of the personal houses, let's look at the sixth house. Well, the classical name was, quote, bad fortune, and historical significance was just, quote, sickness. That's it.
The sixth house represents routines, service to others, sickness and health, and discipleship and mastery, as it has expanded over time. It exalts overcoming the obstacles to bring one's aspiration to fruition. This is a workhouse, and being lately associated with the sign of Virgo, the second steadfast, hardworking earth sign, the placements in this house manifest as challenges to your well-being and indications of how you were able to service others. Virgo here brings forth balance and connection between earth and spirit realms, ideas of intuition, clairvoyance, extrasensory capacities, and altruism. This ties in with Virgo being the domestic, bountiful sign associated with responsibilities, so very much like Mother Earth, providing for her little babies.
That's yes, us. That imagery is helpful because the earth provides us with everything except for, you know, sunlight, but through the energy of sunlight, everything. The bountiful Gaia.
Numerologically, the number six, once again, as double three and triple two, brings up ideas of balance and harmony. I've noticed when numbers multiply or combine together, numerologically, their significance is heightened and synthesized. In this way, the number six evokes the connection between the earth and spirit realms, intuition and clairvoyance, which is why it's called the sixth sense, and compassion and altruism. It is everything home and domestic. Once again, very Virgo connect.
It's interesting that Virgo is this home and domestic, but in a different way than Cancer is.
The fourth house is more like nurture.
Yeah, the moon energy, very like a warm blanket wrapped around you, filled with love, versus I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make sure you have food to eat. I'm going to make sure you have a house over your head. More of a
grounded
version of love.
Like, there is a distinction there. Again, like, different elements, even more water, more emotional, fostering that versus it's just, like, the physicality of Earth.
historically being just bad fortune sickness. I'm glad we've expanded a bit on this definition, as I feel in a broad sense, bad fortune sickness are more of obstacles that you have to go to bring, as you said earlier, aspiration to fruition.
Like I mentioned, it's a workhouse. Things are happening. It's also mutable energy. Things are in motion. Nothing's quite beginning here and nothing's quite ending here.
Yeah, because sickness doesn't entail death necessarily.
No, but like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So like what have you overcome to become powerful
worker? The process.
Your process?
Now, let's get into the houses ruling more of the public sphere of life, starting with the seventh house. The classical name was, quote, Occident. Wow, creative. Then it had the significance of, quote, marriage and women.
How fun. The seventh house is that of marriage and partnership of all kinds. As the opposite of the first house of self, this house focuses more on how you fit into the lives of others, especially those close to you. Placements here could indicate the type of marriage partner you would seek, or really just the kinds of energy you seek to hold closer to you. Libra being seventh, this house does bring up my swift sword of justice, as well as the scales of balance.
Balance, which is what partnership should be about, romantic or not.
Seven is the number of synchronicity, lucky, unlucky, seven. And of course, there are seven chakras, Roy G. Biv, 7 days in the week. It's a perfect prime number, which pops up everywhere. It has a mystical connotation of spiritual awakening, introspection, and the pursuit for ontological truth. So when you see sevens around, it's usually indicating opportunities for growth and the opening up of alignment with a higher purpose. The seven cards in the Tarot Minor Arcana indicate karmic cause and effect of each suit as well. It's like, that's also shaped my thinking of the number a bit. The odd ones, they're like yes, this is karma versus the even numbers end up being the universal natural order of things, which I find interesting. Like, no one has said that explicitly, but that's what I've picked up. Side note about numbers.
Well, clearly, historically, marriage and women was for the men out there. And Occident was for the colonizers. I don't know. I don't know, yeah, just, it's Libra, it's that balance, it's that partnership, which also looking at Seven as being more of that cause and effect, too, I feel like is the balance in the world. Going from the private houses into the public houses, we see, again, a pattern. The first house is more private, your actual personality, who you are, versus the seventh house is that personality, I feel like, when you are with others.
Like, you're close.
You're not necessarily a different person, but, like, we do have different ways to project ourselves socially in different types of partnership. Like you said earlier, how you fit into the lives of others, like, how you mingle.
Yes.
Next up, the eighth house. The classical name was, quote, beginning of death. And its historical significance was, quote, death and misfortune. Damn.
The eighth house is the house of death, rebirth, sexuality, and transformation. I know this because all of my Capricorn is in this house. It observes the fruits of your relationships and your power to change on the understanding made possible based on the perspective of no longer being a solo writer. Placements in this house refer to how your sexuality manifests and the lessons you must learn for growth and change to transform in this world.
Yeah, we have the eighth house ruled by Scorpios, so like the cycle of death and rebirth, the idea of growing from hardships and letting go of my thoughts, apparently.
I guess letting go of that old version of yourself, as the Scorpios do.
Do they? Do they?
Kind of. Yeah.
It's a question mark.
Yeah. I would say yes.
Don't fact check us on this.
Don't quote me on this, but like all my
Napoleon
Scorpios.
Napoleon
yo-yoed. Numerologically, 8 is a number of movement, growth, abundance, and prosperity. If 2 was balanced, 4 was stability, then 8 is bounty. It represents infinity as the symbol is just an 8 with a different perspective, and it's that loop between the conscious and unconscious. So in that way, it does kind of tie back to, like, how are you consciously and unconsciously changing and transforming in this beginning of death?
Yes, and also death, I feel, at least in the United States, is very, it's more taboo, like, oh, let's not talk about it. However, death and destruction really leads to wonderful rebirth and generation, as we keep using these terms.
These are keywords, these are buzzwords.
There's no other way to put it besides the cycle, 8, the infinity sign, it's just, keep going. Death.
Keep looping.
Regrowth. Like, okay, if we want anything to survive in the world, other things have to die. I hate to say it, but that's the fact of it.
There's only so much that can be sustained once. I will agree.
There is. And soil that is the best fertilized.
The most fertile soil. The most fertile land.
The most fertile land comes from destroyed land.
Well, yes.
No, just prairie fire specifically by fire.
Prairie fires.
Not by people. That would not help. There's also erosion, moves around minerals, and all
elemental
of these things.
Destruction.
Elemental destruction leads to prosperity. Things will regrow.
Precisely.
We all gonna die. Chill out.
We all have an eighth house.
Then we have the ninth house. The classical name was, quote, God. And the historical significance was, quote, religion, learning, and voyages. In contrast to those short journeys earlier.
The ninth house rules intuition and higher learning, which manifests in areas of travel, religion, philosophy, and higher learning. We're seeing here an expansion of horizons in mental, physical, and spiritual aspects of life, and placements here build upon the 8th house's journey of transformation, leading to expanded perspective and new horizons. Once again, keywords. This house being associated with Sagittarius also brings up that keyword of, you guessed it, expansion. So this house strokes that fiery passion of human curiosity.
Phallic.
Your placements here would distinguish how you approach your learning.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we have more of an outward expansion of ideas within the collective thought, such as religion, academia, voyages, in contrast to the third house focusing more on expansion through personal connections. Again, this is more of that public sphere. So in contrast to having more personal mental concepts in the third house, communication, your interactions with the world, and more close, short journeys,
I suppose. Well, once again, third house is
social mental concepts of the public sphere being religion, learning, that academia, that collective thought.
Yeah, and once again, to touch on the planets associated with the signs associated with the houses, Mercury associated with Gemini and that third house, quick interpersonal, interplanet journeys, versus ninth house being Sagittarius, Jupiter, outer planets, more philosophical concepts.
Which is also interesting that the outer planets are more generational in that collective mind.
Yeah. Nine is a great number. It's a number of fulfillment, wisdom, higher consciousness, and the ultimate goal of enlightenment. So I enjoy this number quite a bit, as I do all multiples of three. Nine builds on the bounty of six by adding another tier to this trinity of triunion.
Three squared.
I mean, two three cubed.
Or no,
is it three squared, two cubed.
Okay.
So five is a karmic decision, seven is karmic cause and effect, nine is karmic fulfillment. There's a reward for your intentions and actions. You just have to tune in to find comfort in it.
Following, we have the 10th house. The classical name was, quote, midheaven, with a significance of, quote, success, honor, and power.
The midheaven, or 10th house, rules public image, career, and legacy. This is your Alexander Hamilton house. It rules the public life, career, your relationship with authority, and the opposite parent. So, like, if you're a Cancer house with your daddy issues, then this house is yo mama. This house represents the foundation of how your personality manifests in the public world. Placements here indicate what energies and challenges will come up for your career. With Capricorn being the 10th sign, there's, of course, the emphasis of hard work and success in the personal life and clip-clopping to that goal, which is, unfortunately, the entire goal of this capitalistic life. But hand-in-hand with Capricorn is the shadow of Saturn, always bringing up limitations. In that way, this house has that Saturn influence as well.
So it's like the LinkedIn house. Psh, stereotypical Capricorn shit.
The number 10 is, of course, super important. It's an entire base for accounting system. This is the number of fingers and toes we have, and it's a number of completion, of attainment, of wholeness, and the ending of a cycle. With 1 and 0 coming together, it is the union of masculine and feminine unit. It is also sometimes described as the rebirth or transformation of 1, since it is the next landing on the ladder of growth. Anything having to do with Capricorn, I just, like, see a little mountain. Clip-clop.
Yes. Also, to think of your career, quote, public image in a more abstract way outside of the capitalistic lens. This is a public house, again, opposite of the fourth house being more personal security, that family foundation in life, your inheritance per se, if you may. Whereas this house is social security, it does not necessarily need to be a job or a profession, but again, that legacy, that public image that you're putting out, that establishes you in the social sphere. Next up, the 11th house. The classical name was, quote, good demon. Cool. Good demon. Good boy. Historical significance was, quote, friends and favors. It's your boy, good demon, friends and favors.
The 11th house is the house of goals, objectives, memberships, groups, and associations. I like to call it the house of hobbies, if you will. feel free to quote me on that one. So the work in the 10th house is released through the activities that are associated with the 11th house. This is your house of play. Placements in this house hold visions for the future, group associations, and how you view your friendships. Associated with Aquarius, which brings up Saturn and Uranus.
Definitely. I can see how our water bearer mixed with some Saturn energy can lead to more of an influence on our ideas for nurturing the collective, our spot in various communities.
Yes, and with sideways Uranus adding an out-of-the-box feel. And the number 11 is quirky and mysterious too. So it's the number of destiny, which is why we wait for 11-11 to make a wish, or 9-11, like some people do. But there's still that one. It's Miss Ram. Still, there is that double one. It's considered a master number, probably because of the double, is my theory.
Whip, whip!
But, like, it's a palindrome, first of all, so that's fun. And it's a prime number, which makes it quirky, like Aquarius.
Being opposite of the fifth house, being more of that personal creativity, that pop star energy of Leo.
That spotlight.
More spotlight energy. We have that more personal creativity of your inner desires and goals, things that you really want personally. Then this 11th house is more of goals and objectives, again, in that more public collective sense of the word.
Your altruism. How do you want to, like, contribute to other things outside of yourself?
Ending our houses and ending the houses of public life, we have the 12th house. So, of course, the classical name was, quote, bad demon. The significance was, quote, enemies and conspiracies. Like, people did have a lot of wars and enemies and conspiracies to overthrow rulers all the time.
12th house is the house of karma. Karma is like ever present. However, this house is the most illuminated by it, and it is the end of the cycle. It's a bit more transformative. This refers to the unconscious, the metaphysical, and is traditionally associated with confinement and self-undoing, which I guess ties into paranoia and conspiracies and shit. Karma is the universal law of cause and effect, and action and reaction. And what sign is this? Pisces, the sign of the ebb and flow.
It's all a conspiracy. Just kidding. But yes, I see this idea of karma being our lessons learned from our enemies in an abstract sense. Enemies are no longer considered to be physical human beings, but also our own anxieties and doubts of ourselves, which hold us back from progressing. Our enemies now are, you know, anything that can, like, kill you and end your life and end the cycle in a more abstract way, of course. If we think of karma in terms of reincarnation, it's the idea of moving forward with the lessons learned from your previous selves, your consciousness lived in past lives. You can move to a new cycle, which, like Pisces, also marks the end of the zodiac, moving on to the beginning once again.
And the number 12, we've touched on before a little bit, 12 seasons, 12 signs, etc. It's the number of cosmic order. And the 12th card in the Major Arcana is the Hanged Man, which indicates there's a lot of things in momentum around you, and it asks you to tune in and meditate on these things so that you are in tune with the flux around you. And in that way, it's a nice whole round number. 12 is a perfect wheel. It's a perfect zodiac.
Perfect pie.
Woo! 12 slices? That's a big pizza.
In contrast to the sixth house being more of discipleship and your progress, this house is really the end. In terms of being more public, it's more of that social service. I don't really know how to interpret that here.
I mean, I see it as like personal service being like how you honor yourself and those close to you versus public service being, I suppose, your contribution on a grander scheme to society.
I think it's interesting that the first house is self, then fourth is parents or like family trauma, seventh is marriage and partnership, and then 10th is outward success in the world. These were all considered the most, quote, powerful, those angular houses. But this term of powerful, I see more as comfort, like the comfort zones that we have in life. These houses seem to be areas in life that provide more foundation and stability and are, in a sense, more material and easier to grow within.
They're all the cardinal houses. Very strong. I see it as like a plow creating that movement. This is what you're armed with, really, yes. going into it.
And then in contrast, the 3rd, 6th, 9th, and 12th houses that rule more of sickness, misfortune, journeys, voyages, enemies, and conspiracies were considered, quote, weak houses. I think these areas of life are more challenging in terms of growth, like exploring the world and experiencing misfortunes that really makes us grow. More of that process, because they're also the mutable signs.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So it's, like, what has pushed you to overcome feeling weak, maybe? And then what has made you stronger from that? What have you learned?
Yes. Also, I don't think this is a hot take, but practice does not equal perfection. Practice just equals growth. The process just leads to, yes, becoming stronger at whatever you're practicing. Then we have the 2nd, 5th, 8th, and 11th houses, which influence more of wealth, childhood, death, and are part in the collective space. These are the fixed signs. It is more of that stability in your life, not necessarily the comfort zones of growth, but it's
your inner strength.
Yes.
It's also more stable in the sense that these are constant themes that we always experience as human beings.
Yes, like fixed
your
themes.
Core values, your aesthetics, your work ethic, your discipleship. Your things conceptions of death and taboos and things that are not talked about or expressed, but present.
Experiences that are motifs in the human experience. Let's talk about the elements. Let's just, like, keep these connections going. Let's look at some patterns.
Okay. I've been studying elements within tarot a little bit. So earth would be more of the physical state, materialistic things. Water is the emotional state. Air is the mental state. And fire is the spiritual state.
Also, like, I think of the show Avatar: The Last Airbender.
A classic.
And I think of the origins of element bending as well. Earth bending was given by the badger moles.
The badger moles!
Who just, you know, wanted to make homes. It was very physical oriented. The goal was like, more physical.
It's yeah, it was very
structure, basic needs.
Within the earth, like they
on the Maslow.
What?
The hierarchy of needs.
Maslow.
I was like, I just said his name, it's so weird.
This would be like the bottom part.
The base. Maslow's pyramid.
Then we had firebending that was passed down from dragons to those who cherish the relationship between dragons and humans.
And that is just pure spirit.
It was very spiritual to watch.
Fire is also like an element of that spark, that
it was
ignition.
A way to talk to gods a lot too, yeah. Historically.
Meditating on the flame and stuff, that's also supposed to enhance your inner spirit that way. And then waterbending.
The moon was the first waterbender.
Yes, our ancestors, the waterbending just came from the moon.
How it pushed the tides and learned how to do it themselves.
Okay, that's why he was like, I'm going to kill the moon.
Yeah.
What's his face? The crazy general.
Here we go. Waterbending was learned from the moon, which, as we have discussed, is a very emotional.
Clearly, in all literature, everywhere, fictional and non-fic, we have connections between emotional state, the moon, and the tides, and water.
Yes.
As an element.
And then
airbending came from the flying bison.
Yeah, they just wanted to fly.
I mean, the swiftness of air, it's a powerful element, which I feel is not always given credit. Thoughts are so fast. Thoughts are as fast as air.
Airbending was learned from the bison who just wanted to fly up into the clouds as far as we know. And when you think of being really in your head and in your mind, like when someone is really lost in their thoughts, we're like, oh, or is your head in the clouds?
Or even the fact that thoughts are so quick and rapid, you know, flimsy and changeable like the wind.
Yes.
And
not connected to that physical ground.
No. Thoughts manifest by physical action through earth. They can bring up emotional needs and they can, you know, ignite your spirit. Once again, all the elements are connected, but air is very, like, swift and mental, and being able to detach from that, and that need to detach is emphasized in a lot of Eastern philosophies for attaining peace with the mental state. Just shout out to Avatar The Last Airbender for giving us a bite-sized slice of all of these various philosophies as children and young adults.
Yes.
And adults. This is literature.
Continuing on this show, it's a very nice visual, and each character kind of symbolizes also their element. Katara is usually the most emotional.
She's very emotional, but she's also that healer.
She's a healer, she's very caring, she's protective, she's a nurturer. She had to be from family traumas, but...
She a Cancer!
I enjoy that personification, if you may, of the elements. And then Toph is, like, a very rough and steady, completely disconnected visually from the world. And really,
connected.
Really relies on that physical connection to the world, which, again, emphasizes the fact that Earth is a very physical element, opposite of air, which is mental.
And she's all about her foundations, too.
Yes. Aang also really struggled the most with earthbending because he was too stuck in his head.
As an airbender.
And as a monk... too disconnected from the world and not really being able to balance cherishing the physical world, but also being able to not be attached to it. There's a difference between connecting and attaching to something, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
The other elements, fire and water, came to him a little bit easier. Firebending is very spiritual in nature. And,
but even then, he would like, really had to confront his fear with, like, harm and fear with, like...
fear of being angry, and that's what I really love about Zuko and firebending, is not only it a wonderful representation of the element fire, it also is a really wonderful psychological promotion that it's okay to be angry in healthy ways and to grow spiritually from your anger, as... we know anger is usually an emotion that really just means you're hurt or you're really feeling something else. You're feeling scared, you're feeling threatened, and anger pushes you to confront those issues. But to just continue to be angry, bottle things up, where, you know, you might just really heat some candles up when you're like, oh, yeah, tell me bad news. Sure, I can handle it. And then your uncle tells you bad news. And you're like, what? And almost burn your room down.
Sounds personal.
Yes. Firebending is just very spiritual. Like, it's not anger. It's...
there is, like, that inner fire that you have. Yeah.
Like,
your breath is life. Breath is fire.
It's interesting that all the... fire signs are the first, fifth,
and
ninth house. The earth is 2, 6, 10.
The air signs are 3, 7, and 11, which I like that the air signs are all prime numbers. They deserve it. Like, who else could it be but the wacky 3? And then the water signs are 4, 8, and 12. I do enjoy how the houses, all 12 of them, build kind of into this journey through the zodiac almost, and how they connect on a little adventure, starting with the first house self and establishing the self and your core values and how you communicate in your short journeys. And then we go back into fourth house being past, fifth house being that projection of your spotlight self. And sixth being how you begin your work in the world as a learner, as an apprentice, as a novice, really. And then seventh, eighth, ninth is learning to make those connections and building that partnership, beginning to grow from it and transform from it into expansion with this new perspective and new self. And then from there, the last little trilogy, once you're armed with the first 9, you begin that work of your career in the 10th and associations and friendships and making those connections. And ultimately, your efforts come to fruition in 12. What a fun little journey. Thank you for joining me.
Earth and water are also the only even ones.
Yeah.
And it's more
stability. The feminine ones. The odd numbers are very masculine.
I know, water is like 4, 8, 12.
Rounded out.
So it's very like building upon that stability. And those houses
Earthers. I don't know if that's 10.
Really,
it's just like a different.
A significant thing.
I feel like it's a significant.
Number
connection.
Wise.
It's a significant connection, but like, I think it's interesting.
More of a square air. Well, Earth is 2, 6, 10.
Earth is symbolized by squares. Water is symbolized by. Doesn't it say Earth is a square?
It's the. Versus.
Oh yeah, that's one of them.
That one.
But like, I think it's in like. I mean, yeah, all the feminine signs.
Yeah, like fire has the one, which is very phallic.
1, 7, 5, and 9. Just like very like
not prime
numbers, but edgy number. They're edgy numbers.
They're like, edgy numbers.
Like what else would describe them but edgy?
And then 2, 6, 10.
They're not like fully rounded numbers, but like, you know, it's like, I don't know. I like those numbers. Like, they're
very grounded still.
Yeah, like 2 feet, 6 senses, 10. Drummer's drumming. No.
Feminine. We were talking like that wholeness.
Lords a leaping. 10 lords a leaping. Clip clop. That's it. Capricorn. 10 lords a leaping. Clip clop.
Okay. Then prime numbers, which, like, they're doing their own thing.
The wacky three.
The wacky three.
And then,
water is 4, 8, 12.
Very rounded, again, comforting, yeah, stability. Like, yes.
Squares upon squares. I just think of also, like, when your egg becomes multiple cells.
Mitosis? Meiosis?
No, when your egg does it.
Oh.
Different type of cell here.
The gamete?
Yeah. I can't think of that one at all. Not relevant. I couldn't put it in, but...
All I can think of is cephalocaudal, proxima distal.
It just, like, it's 2, and then it's 4, and then it just, like, keeps going by...
The zygote.
The anything zygotic. Anything divisible by 4, which is always... What? Alright, well, I think that's it.
I think that's it. That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning into this vibration. And remember,
if you like the vibes, haunt the Insta at witchcraft.vibrations.